Hi, I'm Antonia, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Micah, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Jane, I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Savannah, a student midwife.
Hi, I'm Lucy, and I'm a midwifery support worker.
Hello, my name's Gulbano, and I'm a midwife.
Hi, I'm Abby, and I'm a birth
centre
midwife.
Hi, I'm Jo Tanner, and welcome to this episode of the RCM podcast. Over recent years, there's been much greater emphasis on the need for good mental health. Moves to destigmatise and normalise mental health issues are incredibly welcome. But sadly, the rhetoric is not always matched by action or by investment. This is particularly true for perinatal mental health support. Despite the impact that mental ill health has on women and families during and after pregnancy, perinatal mental health services still receive a fraction of the investment they need to make a positive societal impact. That's why, in August, the RCM launched its roadmap for perinatal mental health, not just outlining the challenges, but also offering solutions to those challenges. In this episode of the podcast, I've been speaking to some of those involved in perinatal mental health, both from a frontline and a strategic perspective, to hear about their frustrations, but also their hopes for the future of care. We start with someone who's no stranger to the podcast, Yasmin Akhtar from Barnsley Hospital, who earlier this year won the RCM Award for Perinatal Mental Health Support.
So I started off as a healthcare assistant initially, maternity in another unit, and then did my training and became a midwife. I've been in Barnsley for over 11, 12 years now, and I worked previously in my role, I worked in with bereavement, and that's where my passion was a lot, with looking after women that had losses. When I came to Barnsley, the opportunity never rose to look at bereavement, but the opportunity rose for mental wellbeing. So that's where then I pursued that. I also am a qualified counsellor, so my role really works dual. So I support women, I counsel women that have had miscarriages, terminations, pre-terminations. So them skills have really helped me understand a little bit better about my mental health role. So I see my mental health role in a different light, supporting women and their family. So I've been doing this role for over 7 years now. I mean, since I started, a lot has changed. I've got a lot more support, and I think because the government's on board as well with the Mental Health Act as well, they're really on board with things. So things are changing, but it's the community attitude we need to change. We need to break that stigma. So the more we talk about anxiety, the more we talk about postnatal antenatal depression, the more we're going to be able to break that stigma. Well, I don't think we'll ever be on the same par as physical health, because physical health always takes, but a lot of physical health is because of mental health. So we need to really invest, and the government are investing in that service. Since I've worked in over 7 years, Barnsley has made lots of changes. I think even though we're a small unit, we've got a lot more going on than the neighbouring hospitals.
Yasmin is rightly proud of what she and her colleagues do at Barnsley. But the inconsistency of provision means that too many women aren't getting the support they need. And at the extremes, that can have devastating consequences. Shona Hamilton is consultant midwife at the Northern Trust, just outside Belfast.
Jo, you read the Confidential Inquiry as a midwife, as it was there in the Confidential Inquiry, as it is now, Saving Mothers' Lives. You read that and you think, this isn't how women should die. This isn't sepsis. This isn't hemorrhage. This isn't cardiac disorder. This is women with trauma and with mental health problems, and this isn't how it should be. And we can't keep focusing as midwives on the physical. We have to remember that our role is about psychological care. It's about emotional work. It's about all those things that are actually more challenging sometimes than to give physical care.
The lack of parity between physical and mental health came up time and again during my conversations. Here's Laura Bridle, a senior midwife for maternal mental health services in London.
There's a midwife, Louise Keeble, who says this great quote, diabetes is less common than mental health, but there's a team of like 4 or 5 diabetes midwives, which is great. I'm not knocking diabetes midwives. I love you. But mental health, quite often there's like a band 7 that's 0.4, 0.3, and it's the leading cause of maternal death. time and time again.
Someone who's keen to see greater parity is Sharon Fernandez, the National Clinical Lead for Perinatal Mental Health with the Welsh Government.
At the beginning, I'm not sure it was recognised, even with, I suppose, the amount of training. So we were encouraging, or we still are, encouraging all colleagues to access. We have the Institute of Health Visiting Perinatal and Infant Mental Health Training. So traditionally, it was a 2-day training course. And I absolutely understand that's a huge amount of time. But is it in comparison to the amount of training that happens for those perceived physical conditions? So, yeah, I think it definitely has improved. I think with the RCM roadmap, this, again, we're reinforcing, aren't we? We're reinforcing that there's parity, that you have to recognise the importance. It's really important to recognise that this, for me, again, it underpins everything. If we can address what's going on emotionally, psychologically, that hugely impacts, I think, on the physical. And I suppose it may be even turning it to the weighting should be on the emotional and the psychological support that we're providing, because in turn that will support everything else that comes after.
Sharon thinks the way that care is delivered may also be a factor.
I think this is very much about our beliefs and that culture around, if you're doing, that's really important, we invest that time. But if you're being, that's a luxury. You know, to be with somebody, because that's what I suppose what I'm trying to convey is that I would like our midwifery colleagues to be with people, to give them the time, to give them the space. I could go down a whole pathway of why that's so important around containment and reciprocity and attuned relationships and all of that. But I'm sure we haven't got time. And also talking about the work that happens in what I refer to as the intersubjective space. It's the aha moments. It's, you know, it's the magic that happens in the silences. And I don't think we recognise that enough. We don't give it anywhere enough recognition. But if we're doing, we're okay.
And that magic that happens in the silences is something that Shona brings up too.
One of the greatest challenges for midwifery, for maternity support workers, for anybody who's in that front line is time. You know, it feels, I know, you know, the staff will say at times it feels overwhelming. There isn't enough time to provide the care that they want. You know, they don't have time to necessarily go the extra mile. But I think sometimes when you think about what we do with these women, you know, some of it isn't the big stuff. Some of it's the small stuff. Some of it is the smile. Some of that is our non-verbals when women tell you a story, like how do you react? You know, what does your face look like? What are those non-verbals portraying? You know, an extra second to just pause and say, how are you today? Are you getting on? The other thing that these women say they respond to very well is that lifting of their self-esteem. You know, very often these women are feeling really, really uncomfortable in themselves. They don't want to be the woman with an addiction. They don't want to be the woman who's having her mental health problem discussed, you know, and that impacts so significantly on their self-esteem and how they feel about how they're going to look after their baby and how they feel about how they're going to manage as a mother. And so some of it is the very simple stuff, encouragement, you know, positivity, reassurance, and yeah, you are going to do a good job. This is the support we can get you. You know, signposting women to positivity. And reinforcing that. And I'm not saying that there isn't anything negative going on in there, but if we actually have those kind conversations, I can't say strongly enough that kindness is important when you interact with these women. And sometimes you'd be surprised by the small things that make a difference. What non-verbals are you looking for if you think they're not well? How do you gently probe and ask a question. How do you gently ask about previous history? What kind of questions do you need to be asking, you know, to get some of that information? And I say, you know, asking a question about mental health or addiction or domestic violence or any of those things should be no different than asking a woman about any of the rest of her medical history. I sometimes think we almost talk it off. Oh, I'm going to ask you a different question. You know, there's something about, and I also think, and again, I will be honest, I think sometimes you ask a question in a way that you get the response that you want. So your mood's good. So everything's good at home. Yeah. So, you know, you don't drink alcohol when you're pregnant. You know, you can ask a question in a fashion that you get the response that you want. And when you're busy, you know, and again, that's about checking yourself as a midwife and reflecting on that. We've all done that. So there's something about learning to ask questions, sometimes gently, but also sometimes just let women know that that's the question that you ask every single woman. It's a question that is no different than, did you have your appendix out? To, do you have a history of postnatal depression? Do you have a history of eating disorder? Those questions should just come in the same tone, in the same way, so as women feel that that has equal importance in terms of their care.
It may sound simple, but asking the right questions in the right way is what gets you the right answers. That's particularly true around mental health, where, despite its higher profile, there still remains a real stigma. Here's Justine Anderson, Specialist Midwife for Perinatal Mental Health at NHS Tayside.
In all honesty, I would say that's still work in progress. And even today, just speaking with a colleague, I've identified other areas that I feel that we need to really work on with midwifery around sort of professional curiosity in all aspects of our role as a midwife. But I suppose with a specific perinatal lens, you're right in what you've identified, that women will present really on the surface quite happy, cheery, but it doesn't mean that that's the case. And vice versa, some women will present and they're quite flat, but actually these women function, that's the way they are. And you, so again, it's about developing that professional curiosity. So from a specialist midwife's perspective, again, it's really about having made myself available that the midwives can engage with. If they have seen a woman coming through at any point, whether it's been antenatally, postnatal, intrapartum, and they're not sure or they've got concerns, then again, it's about signposting that back to me so I can explore a bit further. But the balance is not about me or the specialist midwife taking the whole responsibility about that. It's about enabling the midwives to take that step further and to build up their skill set in being comfortable and competent and confident and actually having that professional curiosity and asking, what does that look like for you? What does that mean for you? What impact is that having for you in your home life? But again, it's about building that professional curiosity and that confidence within the staff to engage in those conversations and not to shy away from it. And I think a lot of that is human nature, is to shy away from something which for a lot of us wouldn't be in the mindset. But again, it might just be a fleeting comment that someone's made because they're having a bad day, and that might be their default, that they've gone to just saying that because that's what they say. And it's hard for midwives to determine, is that just what they say or is that actually really real, that risk?
In Wales, Sharon has introduced a framework developed with service users to address these challenges.
We have introduced a process, and we're encouraging all our midwives and midwifery colleagues to ask, assess and act. So they'll ask everybody at every contact, how are you feeling today? And that questions come from service users. They want to be asked. They want to be asked more than once because they want to know that people care enough and they have the time to hear what they have to say. Because for some or the majority, being able to share that you're not feeling so great is really, really hard. So we've got that process. So they would ask, they would then, and that's based on evidence. So the conversations around including the Hooley and the GAD questions, so thinking about depression and anxiety. And then we want them to be able to assess those that need it or further assessment, and that's using the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Questionnaire. So once we have that, they'll have an indication, because we've developed our pathways on 5 levels of need. They'll have a much better, our midwifery colleagues have a much better idea of what level of care is needed, so the right care at the right time by the right people. And it's that, I suppose, that process that has really made us focus and strengthen our work with the third sector. So our level one is around the universal offer. It's asking our midwives to ask everybody and to promote the normal transition to pregnancy and parenthood, whether that's through written information, whether that's from online resources or our community groups. Our level two is around watchful waiting, whereas we may have a little bit of a concern, but we don't want to intervene just yet. So we will do all of the promoting, the self-help, self-guidance, and then make contact in a couple of weeks. Our level three is around our active listening. And I know that this was quite difficult for, I suppose, the majority, because it felt as if we were asking them to do much more. But what I believe is that they were doing it already. They're naturally doing it. You know, they'll naturally make a space to see somebody again or contact to make sure they're OK. But then we were asking them to do some additional contacts. And I'm sure you'll understand that it's incredibly difficult at the moment, and there's a lot of pressure on staff. So this is where our third sector come in, because they can do that, you know, they're within our communities. So again, it's not across the whole of Wales, but we've got some great relationships that we've built up with our Home Start colleagues. We've got Mind Mums Matter, we've got Dad Matters in some parts of Wales, and more latterly we are working with NSPCC Pregnancy in Mind. So they now provide a virtual free online group to all women with mild to moderate mental health difficulties across Wales. So our midwifery colleagues no longer should feel that they're left holding, because they have the ability to signpost to an online group. But also what we've been doing is offering training. So we want to make sure our midwifery colleagues have the right skills, they have the right support, and they are confident to be able to ask, assess and act.
Societal attitudes and expectations of pregnancy and motherhood can sometimes be a barrier to accessing support for mental health. Social media, for example, may present a perception of pregnancy that's totally at odds with how they're feeling, which may make them feel even less likely to ask for help in case they're judged. And it's not just by friends and family. Shona says, as midwives, we need to guard against judging those who come into maternity services.
I always, always do remember going back many, many years ago to a really young woman who had, I was working in labour ward at this stage, and I was doing some clinics downstairs, so kind of a mishmash of a job. And this young woman had a really awful history from a mental health point of view, and, you know, had issues around drug addiction, and she was really scared. She was really scared of hospitals. She was really scared of people. She was really, like, she didn't trust people. And I remember establishing a relationship with her and having conversations and thinking, do you know what these women need is a bit of continuity and a midwife without judgment and a sense of being able to trust the system. And I suppose in many respects, and I do think back to her, she did really well, you know, and she was a great character. And I suppose to all intents and purposes, she just looked around and thought, how many of those women get lost in our busy, busy system? How many of those women can't articulate what it is they need? And sometimes I think, and I hate to say this as a midwife sometimes, but sometimes I do think our judgment gets in the way of the care that we provide. And I hate to say that, but sometimes, and I have been that person, I can say that honestly. And I think sometimes it's about their story being heard. It's about them being heard And, you know, when you think of some of the stuff that comes up in midwifery now around women feeling they're not being listened to, there is something incumbent upon us as midwives to just take that moment to pause and hear the story and hear their journey. And then that opens up, it opens up a different relationship. And then and then I think when you have trust, you hear a story. And when you hear a woman's story, then you're able to provide her with better care.
Justine agrees.
Although we all set out to be non-judgmental, we do carry stereotypes inherent within being a human. And I think it's really part of the perinatal role is to challenge that within your work colleagues. You know, it's not been the first time I've come across when you walk into a clinical area and it's put to you as the specialist midwife that we have one of your ladies in. And when you ask that question, what does that mean? And it's often referred back to, oh, mental health. And the stigma around that. Now, I'm quite sure that that health professional's not meaning it in a derogatory way, but by presenting it to me like that, I feel quite protective of that woman at that point. Well, what does that mean? We don't know the background, or if we do know the background, we don't always know how that's impacted. So let's just embrace that and find out, what does it mean? Why is the woman here? Is it for concern around mental health? Or is there a deterioration somewhere? Is there something we can do or signpost? So it's about being confident and approaching those barriers within our own staff groups, our own peer groups. And I do feel that although mental health is much more accessible help, there's much more discussion around it, whether it's in the professional platform or everyday people just having conversation with themselves, there's still a lot of work to be done. There have been times when I've challenged quite directly about, I maybe don't like the tone that's used around that. And at the end of the day, this woman's a woman who's pregnant, who has presented to us with a concern, and we deal with that regardless, but we keep that in mind of the bigger holistic picture of that woman's care.
When it comes to the relationship between midwives and women, we often talk about trust. A lack of judgment is fundamental to that, but that trust also helps create a safe space where women can be open and honest about how they're feeling. Here's Yasmin again.
A lot of women feel that if they say, I'm having intrusive thoughts about, oh, I don't like this baby, or I don't want this baby, that the social service will be involved and take that baby away. But actually, I normalise that. That's quite common. Do you know the chemical imbalance that's happening? If they want advice on medications, I talk about how the medication works and how it then changes while they're pregnant. So they might need an increased dose and all that stuff. So I really, really listen to that woman and make her feel that it's okay how she's feeling, but let's do something about it. And it's like they're acknowledging that it was all right for them to feel that way, and it's social service don't have to be involved because they're not a risk, posing a risk to that baby. And I always say to women, you actually saying that I'm feeling this way shows that you're going to be a good mum because you don't want to feel that way. If you didn't care, you wouldn't be coming to see me, you wouldn't be wanting that professional support because you didn't care, you won't be caring about how you're feeling and what the impact it's going to have on this baby. But actually you speaking out and saying that I'm feeling a certain way shows that you're going to be a good mum, and just saying them words and hearing it from somebody makes a massive difference to them women. And you do see them, oh, do you think, oh, thank you. And sometimes women tear up when I say that to them.
Sharon has a similar experience, drawn from her time as a health visitor.
What's key is it might be, I say, as simple as, but I think it's quite complex, some time and a cup of tea. Again, I suppose in my role as a health visitor, I did a lot of that work. Just being able to convey those messages that you're willing and you've got the time to go back to listen to what's going on in somebody's head means that that big black monster that just gets bigger and bigger because you're too afraid to share or say is then, you know, it's alleviated. Oh my gosh, it's normal. Other people feel like that. You know, I'm saying all these things to you and you're not shocked. Because again, I, you know, as a health star, I've probably heard them all before. And that's really, really important all the way through to that specialist care for those that really need it.
Normalising anxiety and depression during and after pregnancy is an important step, not only in taking away the stigma around perinatal mental health, but also ensuring that women and families are able to access the right levels of support. For those who've previously experienced pregnancy loss, being pregnant again can bring with it multiple layers of apprehension. Earlier this year, the Westminster Government published its Pregnancy Loss Review, which looked at how support for those who've experienced pregnancy loss should be improved.
Hi, I'm Sam Collinge. I'm the lead bereavement midwife at George Eliot Hospital NHS Trust in the Neaton and the co-author of the Pregnancy Loss Review.
I'm Zoe Clark-Coates. I'm the CEO of the Mariposa Trust, which most people know by our primary support division, Saying Goodbye, and the co-author and co-chair of the Pregnancy Loss Review, which is an independent review that was commissioned by the government.
Like Yasmin, they saw inconsistency of provision.
What we saw really quickly when we started visiting hospitals and speaking with different groups, parents who had gone through loss themselves, but also medical providers across England, we saw that there was a real inconsistency. So in some areas, we saw really excellent care. In other areas, we saw really, really poor care. But what also surprised us was that it wasn't all the same care didn't come out of one hospital. So we could see really shocking things in the hospital and also great things. And that really showed us the fact that half the time it's not because of a lack of will or heart to get to offer good care to people. It was the fact of poor training, lack of training.
Some hospitals got really, really great pathways in place for next pregnancies and others haven't a pathway at all. So it's really down at the moment to how good your community midwife is. If you've booked with a community midwife, obviously a lot of loss occurs pre-booking with a midwife, and how good your GP is really. So and I are calling in the review for improved pathways for women that have had a previous loss. And, you know, more importantly, you know, for education around the fact that, you know, so many families are traumatised by previous experiences, and there needs to be mental health support for both partners in that next pregnancy going forward.
Yasmin has seen just how powerful having a clear pathway of support can be for those families that have experienced previous losses.
I'm very lucky to be, and privileged, I feel, that I'm in a real role where I can support women that have had losses. And they always say once they become pregnant, that counselling session, them counselling sessions stop, and I support them in my mental health role. So that journey then continues for them throughout their pregnancy. The anxiety, sometimes women say, oh, when I get to a certain point, because that's when I lost my last pregnancy, I'll be okay. But what they realise that the goalpost moves. So after 12 weeks scan, the goalpost moves to 20-week scan. So it's that constant roller coaster for them. But then that's where I support them. So the counselling skills really help me to get them to ground themselves, rationalise thoughts. And if it's been traumatic for them, that loss, then I look at trauma-focused support with them and we look at techniques, how to manage that pregnancy throughout until they've had that baby in their arms. Because no matter what reassurance we give vocally, that's not enough till they hold that baby. So really that one-to-one support that I provide for them has really helped. And I do see a lot of women say that if it wasn't for you, this pregnancy, I wouldn't have gone through it.
Of course, working with women who've experienced pregnancy loss or those with mental ill health also takes its toll on midwives. Here are Zoe and Sam again.
I followed some amazing midwives at the very start of this review 5 years ago. They're no longer midwives anymore. They couldn't stay in the profession when they were burning out and they didn't feel that they'd got anything to offer their families at the end of the day. We can't keep seeing this happening. We need to protect those staff first and foremost, because it's only when they're in a good place can they offer excellent care to the people that they're meant to be looking after. And so I hope you'll have seen through those 73 recommendations, that's been at the real heart of this, about looking after the staff, making sure they get the bereavement leave they're entitled to when they've also gone through loss, and making sure they feel trained to the level that they feel utterly confident to handle any situation that might come to their door that day. And I think if we don't offer that to the staff, then we can't criticize them for offering poor care. It goes two ways. We need to train them. We need to equip them. We need to fund them in their work. We need to show them that when they're working in bereavement services, this isn't a tea and sympathy post. This is a vital part of medicine. And I think only when we really adjust to that can we then say, now, how can we better the care experience of the patient?
I have been a bereavement midwife for 25 years, so I, you know, consider myself as quite assertive, really. And I've become quite resilient. But, you know, sometimes it's been a real fight to actually get any kind of counselling, supervision or support for myself and my colleagues. And I think there is an increased awareness now of the impact of baby loss on professionals and the importance of having debriefings, sessions and support for staff, but I think there's still a long way to go.
This is echoed by Shona and Laura.
It's not just about the specialist midwives, it's about what we build around those specialist midwives. Supervision, support, reflective practice, checking in with them around vicarious trauma. You know, we really need to think. I sometimes think in midwifery, we do this all the time, you know, we do, oh, specialist midwife, tick, we've achieved that, now on you go out there into the world and solve the problems of the world. And again, without giving them the security blanket or, you know, that safety net, or when you're starting to find, you know, somebody checking in and saying, when are you off on your annual leave? When was the last time you had annual leave? When are you setting that to one side? You know, whose story are you taking home?
Also importantly, how we're supporting each other. You know, especially midwives working on the birth centre, postnatal ward, they work 13, 14 hour shifts, no breaks, going home, and the trauma that they've seen, like what support have they had? So having that time and prompt for all staff, obstetricians, anaesthetists, maternity support workers, midwives to say, how does that feel to be in that scenario? What support would you do if you needed some support? What language could we have used with that family? Think about the partner. So just not thinking about the physical stuff that we do to families, but the emotional stuff.
Peer support between colleagues is important, but it also plays an important role for the women in our care too. Here's Sharon.
From my experience as a health visitor, is that often women will think that they're the only ones that feel like that. They make assumptions about how others are, because on the whole, people present with a happy, smiley, this is amazing face, which probably covers a multitude of whatever's going on below. And, you know, I can remember the relief in women when I'm saying, but you're not the only one. You know, I hear this time and time again. And that, you know, we talk about our third sector community support. That's where, again, they're key, not just offering support for those with mild to moderate, but that then enabling that peer support afterwards. So particularly noticeable with our Mind Mums Matter groups, is that they were introduced as a pilot into Wales about 5 or so years ago, a 6 to 8 week group course. But what naturally came from that was peer support groups. And now it's part of the model. I'm seconded from Powys, which is a huge rural area. And Mums Matter was piloted first there. 5 years later, they have peer support groups across the whole of Powys. we recently had a celebration event that I attended, and there was a hall full of women and their families. And that's what they were saying, we're part of a family. You know, that peer support has provided so much for women over the years.
Yasmin has set up a similar programme in Barnsley.
So the mums group initially did start with Mind the Charity, but then they lost the bid. So this group then was just sat in limbo. So I took it on to continue it. So I've really fought for this group because I do see the benefits. The women do come scared on their own in that group during pregnancy, and they leave that group with the confidence. We build that confidence in them as a parent. So we do bonding with the bump, bonding with the baby. We do baby yoga, baby massage. Myself and my colleague, we've been funded by the trust to do that because we were getting outside speakers which weren't reliable. So we've been provided that opportunity to take on that. So we do baby massage, baby yoga, and we've had a 5-week program, and it's really taken on because you see them bonding, you know, attachment that with that baby where they may have not done before. So we had a lady in the group, and she didn't really sing the song. So like the baby massage that we do, we have little nursery rhymes and sing, but she wasn't doing any of the singing. And after the like session, we just have a chat and sit with everybody and see what's going on. And actually that woman said, I was never taught any nursery rhymes or songs. I wasn't taught that as a child. But she said, I did enjoy it. I just don't feel comfortable singing. And the third session we've had now, she's up and joining the songs and doing the baby yoga and baby massage. So that confidence we've built in her, knowing that communication she's going to do with that baby and interact with baby, is massive. And that's why I do the group. But we do focus the group on mental health. And that's why the mum's group is completely different than a children's centre's group, because we focus on mental health every step throughout during pregnancy. They build that bond with other mums, they build that confidence with us, and then they go on to have the baby, and then they're in the baby group, and they continue to build that confidence throughout that. And then they meet good friends, and we've known women from that group that go on and have coffee every Monday because they can't come to the group anymore, or you know, they go to each other's christenings or birthday parties because they met somebody from the group that understood them.
That experience of just being together or feeling able to share how they're feeling honestly is having an incredible impact, not just on the women themselves, but on their relationships with their babies, their partners, and their wider families. On the face of it, it seems so simple, and it underlines something which came up so often in my conversations, including with Justine.
I think midwives feel we need to be a jack of all trades, and we need to have all the answers, and we need to fix things. In actual fact, it's about being a human. It's not about being a midwife. I think being midwife is secondary to that. For a lot of it, not all of it, but actually the fact that you're wearing a midwife uniform and you're the one, the healthcare professional that she's got contact with that day. Overall, I think we have good engagement with women because they trust midwives. We're probably the good guys in all of this. But it's not about the midwives having the answer. It's just about having the time or making the time just to listen. You don't have to fix it, but you can acknowledge what difficulties that they're going through that day and listen. Good quality listening is a healer. I think sometimes we can be hung up about asking set questions that are given on our sheets or our notes to ask. And actually, it's not about framing it is probably about framing the question in a way that you have a gut feeling, but you're trying to lead into that. Maybe down a trajectory that your gut feeling sits. It's about having the confidence to do that without leading that, actually, and making someone confess or divulge information that might not be accurate. But I think a lot of that comes with life experience as a human and professional experience. It's not to say that newly qualified practitioners coming into the workforce don't have it because they're just in the door. Some people must, you know, are just natural at that. But it's about being mindful how we frame those questions. And if it doesn't feel the right time to ask it, and there's not a real risk that you're concerned of, it's okay to not ask it at that point. It's okay to come back to that another time if it's safe enough to do so. I do think as midwives, we need to stop thinking that we're there to fix anything that comes through our service doors, whether it's mental health. And let's face it, it's the same with a woman presenting with epilepsy or diabetes. As a midwife, would I try and fix that? No. I would get the right team involved around that woman to help support her. So why would mental health be any different? We feel we've got to contain it, but we don't. We just need to be good at our job, good people who listen and value and contain that woman at that moment and get the right help needed, you know, at the right time, if that's what's needed.
Being with women, finding the magic in the silences, can undoubtedly be challenging, not least when too often we have our eye on the clock because the workload is so great. There are undoubtedly some days that are tougher than others, those days when we need something to help carry us through, a reminder that we can do it. For Laura, she goes back to a couple she met in London.
There was this beautiful young couple who became pregnant unexpectedly. They were both Black Caribbean, and she was very quiet in the first few appointments, but was referred to me because of mental health history, but she didn't want to talk about it at each appointment. It took quite a while for her to open up. And then eventually the third appointment, she started to tell me a bit more, fourth appointment, a bit more. And then we talked to her about perinatal mental health services, and she was quite anxious. And talking to her more about it was because of what her family had told her about the risk of social services and the impact and that trust. And I was able to link her with some really good resources, so like the motherhood group, maternal journal, so she could do some stuff at home. And then I said, would you like to meet someone from the perinatal mental health team? Because then it kind of breaks that barrier down. So I went to a couple of appointments with her. So she had me and her partner with her. And then she was actually quite high risk for post-birth. And she'd moved out of area just before giving birth. So I had to find that perinatal mental health team where she was moving to, which was also a very incredible team. And she did become quite unwell towards the end, but contacted me right away, and so did her partner. And we could put things in place to keep her well. And she's thriving now. She's doing incredibly well. I get email updates now and again with her beautiful baby. I feel like that was really powerful, because I just think if she'd gone through traditional clinics, she may not have ever opened up. And what could have happened? What could have possibly happened?
Shona too has a woman who always springs to mind.
She'd had a significant mental health problem that had resulted in her taking drugs. She'd actually lost a baby through an abruption as a result of taking drugs. She was out the other side of it. She was petrified coming to see any health professional. She felt judged. She was involved in social services. She was looking for help and support. And she came, and we developed a relationship. And she came in and had a lovely, healthy baby. And I can still see her now. I'd had a conversation with her about chocolate digestive biscuits. And she came up about 3 weeks after she had her baby with her baby and brought me a packet of chocolate digestives. And I was thrilled to bits. And I still see her intermittently. Yeah, I used to see her with her baby in the pram. And then as things grew and we never really got into conversation again, because I think that part of her life was over, but she always would have nodded and acknowledged and on she went. And and I think though over the years, countless women who you know have benefited from care, you know, women who've been admitted to hospital, women who have had suicidal thought and suicidal ideation, and who come out the other side well and are caring for their baby. So yeah, I think over the years, and they're inspirational women. I think I remember too that about these women is they've conquered so much, you know, and their strength of character and their ability to carry on with their lives, you need to recognize too, because some of their trauma and some of the reason that they're unwell, the fact that they have managed to conquer that and be fabulous mothers and to get the strength to carry on. I think, you know, you never feel to be astonished and admire the strength of women when you're around them for long enough. And I think that's what does your heart good.
When times are tough, we all need something that does our heart good. Supporting women with perinatal mental ill health, of whatever degree, is undoubtedly challenging. Too often, it's under-resourced and underfunded, despite the huge ripple effect it can have on women, on babies, on families, and even on wider society. The RCM roadmap offers solutions and highlights the need for collaboration, not just within trusts and boards, but with the third sector and other agencies too, so that we can deliver the right care by the right people at the right time. It's not a magic wand, but it is what it says on the cover, a roadmap to strengthening perinatal mental health provision. You can find out more about the roadmap at our website, rcm.org.uk. And that's where you can also find other resources around perinatal mental health, including an iLearn module to support your practice. Don't forget, you can still catch up on all of our previous episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you've heard, do tell your colleagues and friends, and maybe even leave us a review. For now, I'm Jo Tanner, and thank you for listening.